The pre-K through 12 appropriations subcommittee will come to order. Adrian, will you please call the roll?
Chair Fine.
Here.
Vice Chair Bell.
Here.
Representative Alupis, excused. Andrade.
Here.
Bartleman.
Here.
Bush. Hawkins.
Here.
Maney.
Here.
McLean. Here. Roach.
Present.
Smith.
Here.
Trunau.
Here.
Valdez.
Present.
Willight.
Here.
Williams.
Here.
Ex officio Clemens. We have a quorum, sir.
Thank you. We have a quorum. Members, please make sure all electronic devices are turned off or are on vibrate. All right, well, this is the big day. All the presentations you've had to listen to, all the work that we've done over six committee weeks and the last 3 weeks of session culminates today. Today we will share a conforming bill and a budget. I will say in advance, before we get started, that everything we talk about today should be thematic to things that we have talked about before. There should be no super surprises. Hopefully you'll say, oh, I remember learning about that in a presentation, or I remember about hearing that. So Deputy Majority Leader Clemens, you gotta go. You got to go around. He's, you know, we're welcome. We're excited to have you here as a guest today. So everything should be, if you've been following, nothing should come as a surprise if you listen to me talk, which I know many of you don't enjoy. Members, today we have two general bills on our agenda and our proposed conforming bill, PCB PKA 2201. I will also be presenting to you my recommended fiscal year 2022-23 pre-K through 12 budget at the end after we cover those three bills. Additionally, as we've already said, the Speaker has appointed Deputy Majority Leader Clemens as an ex officio member of the subcommittee in accordance with House Rule 7.7. House Rule 7.7 allows the Speaker to designate the Majority Whip, which Deputy Majority Leader Clemens is as well, as an ex officio voting member to any committee or subcommittee. And part of the reason he is here is because a lot of members have a lot of bills to present while we are meeting in other committees. So if you wouldn't mind, if you are a member having to present a bill in another committee, just check in with a member of staff so we can make sure we're maintaining quorum and those kinds of things along the way. All right, we are going to start with the conforming bill. And so with that, I'm going to hand the gavel over to our great Vice Chair, Representative Bell, Vice Chair Bell, and she will chair the meeting while I do this.
Well, good afternoon, and at this time, I'd like to recognize Chair Fine to explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. PCB PKA 2201 is the conforming bill necessary to conform applicable statutes to the appropriations provided in the House proposed budget for pre-K through 12 education for the 2022-2023 fiscal year. Specifically, the bill requires that virtual charter schools and districts with a controlled open enrollment school that is an approved virtual instruction program provider, the capacity determination must be based upon the enrollment requirements established in statute. It modifies requirements for establishing a virtual charter school by requiring the use of a standard virtual charter school contract and renewal contract, and it requires virtual charter schools to comply with the enrollment requirements established in statute. It modifies the requirements for virtual instruction programs by, one, requiring the annual audit completed by an approved virtual instruction provider be performed by an independent auditor licensed under Chapter 473 Florida statutes. Requiring a contract with an approved virtual instruction program provider to include additional components, to include submitting a monthly financial statement summary sheet and providing certain student academic achievement data. Third, requiring virtual instruction program providers be approved by the State Board of Education. Fourth, requiring an approved virtual instruction program provider to receive a district grade based upon the aggregated assessment scores of all students served by that provider statewide, as well as a separate school grade for each school district with which it contracts based on the assessment scores of all students served within the school district. As many of you will remember, now many of our virtual schools serve students from outside their district. In fact, on a statewide basis, it is 25% of all virtual students. Next, requiring district virtual FTE students to be funded the same as the FLVS students, and requiring the use of state FEFP funds only for out-of-district virtual FTE students enrolled in a district virtual instruction program. In other words, if a student from District A goes and enrolls in a virtual school in District B, none of the local funds paid for by the taxpayers of that district can be used to pay for that child's virtual education. And then, obviously, funding. We've talked about funding disparities between FLVS and other virtual options, and this will fix that. Next, clarifying that virtual instruction provided by a school district through a contract with an approved virtual instruction program provider may enroll students in other school districts throughout the state. Next, moving on outside of virtual, and again, those of you who followed the committee shouldn't be surprised that we're talking a lot about that. Moving outside of virtual, the bill specifies that the funding for eligible students enrolled in juvenile justice education programs must be the same as traditional students funded in the FEFP. For those of you who care passionately about kids who end up making a mistake and ending up incarcerated in some form or fashion, this should be something you should be very happy about. Next, it modifies the type of Florida Empowerment Program scholarship students that are not included in the statutorily established maximum number of student cap, and clarifies when the scholarship payment adjustments are made to the eligible nonprofit scholarship funding organizations. And lastly, it deletes the digital classroom allocation in the FEFP as we continue to try to streamline the FEFP and make it simpler. And that, Madam Vice Chair, is the conforming bill.
Thank you, Chair Fine. Are there any questions on the bill? You are recognized, Representative Alderman.
Thank you, Chair Bell and Chair Fine. I know we've talked a little bit. I have a couple questions for you today, especially as it pertains to the removing the authorization for school districts to be Florida virtual school franchises. One of the reasons historically that districts became Florida virtual school franchises because this legislature, maybe not the people in this room, but this legislature mandated that every high school student has to take at least one online course. Every high school in the state of Florida, every high school student. So there are a lot of children to serve, and many of those students utilize these franchise programs within their districts. Is there even capacity elsewhere to serve all of the high school students in the state of Florida for that one course?
You're recognized, Chair Fine.
Thank you. I think we have a good answer. So I'd say a few things on this. We have seen data that suggests that when the FLVS product is run in a franchise model, that the performance is materially different than when it is operated through FLVS. And I've shared that data with you all before. We also know that there's only 12 school districts out of our 67 that use this option as their only virtual instruction option. 55 of the 67 are using others right now. And this affects those 12 school districts are serving 2,555 students. There still are four other options. In addition to having students enroll directly with FLVS that school districts can choose, and I would point out, we know there's capacity because we basically doubled in 1 year in order to accommodate COVID, and that seemed to go okay. One of the great things about virtual education is you don't need classrooms and school buses and cafeteria size and those kinds of things. There certainly are some scalable costs that you do need a teacher for every so number of students, although it is a materially different number. And I have experience in this personally as my eighth grader, who hates that I talk about him all the time, but I do, because I look at a lot of this through the lens of him, has now taken, you know, three classes through Florida Virtual School. And so I've seen the positives and the negatives as a parent of that experience. But yes, there is the capacity.
Follow-up?
Yep. Oh, sorry. It's not my place to give it. Sorry.
Follow-up?
Follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. When you're talking about the performance, which performance are you speaking of? Because there are many franchise virtuals that are A's. So are you speaking to the performance? Are you speaking to the data presented in the committee regarding the drop in enrollment?
Thank you for the question. Thank you for the question. No, I'm not speaking about the drop in enrollment, although we did present that. That is not what this is based on. And I don't remember if we presented it in committee, and if we haven't, I can get it for you moving forward. But there is data, and there's data relating to completion rates and other things, like true academic performance indicators, not do people come or go, because I think it may have been you who gave a good explanation of why those, a reasonable theory as to why those numbers may be different. But in actual actual academic performance metrics, we have seen different performance metrics. And it makes sense. I mean, look, if you think outside the education model, in most models, the corporate-owned stores often perform better than the franchise-owned stores. So it's not surprising to see that happen here.
Yeah. You recognize?
Yes, I did not see the data. I know the data that exists for my school district, and it is incredibly high, and like a 98% completion rate. So before this goes to the floor, I think we should have an opportunity to examine the data. It should also be noted that how long franchises, some children are taking 2 years in FLVS to complete a course, like an algebra course, which is not good for the kid. Not good for the child, but districts definitely have strict timelines and guidelines, which is better academically for those students. So when you present that data that demonstrates this case, can you please give that to us? And then with are you aware that the franchise programs offer additional support to the parents than what happens in a pure Florida virtual model? Are you aware of the differences in the support that they give the kids?
You're recognized.
I'm aware that some of the franchisees do additional things beyond simply offer the product. It may be services. It may sometimes be classes. And I will say this at a high level. There's obviously a lot in here about virtual, because we've talked about it a lot. And I really do want to emphasize, particularly as it relates to virtual, This is the starting point on virtual. Virtual education in the state does not make sense how we run it today. That's no one's fault in this room. In this room, whether you're back here or here, it's an artifact of time about making school districts do certain things and the state and everything else. It doesn't make sense in the time frame of 2022. As it relates to virtual, I think there will be ultimately a lot of changes that emerge from the legislature when we finish up here in 6 weeks, or hopefully on time. But I think over the next several weeks, particularly as we shepherd this bill through the process and take it to conference, I highly encourage everyone who cares about virtual education to come and see me and we can talk about it, because I believe we will get a lot of feedback along the way. Part of the reason we have been so aggressive in this PCB is to wake everybody up, get everybody's attention, and say, change is coming. If you want to make your voice heard, get your voice heard. But remember, this we will pass off the floor. This bill is one of the things that is subject to those conference discussions with the Senate that happens in several weeks. So I fully anticipate a lot of meetings and a lot of discussions, but this was my way to wake everybody up. And I know, based on the emails and calls that I've gotten, that mission has been accomplished.
And I'll just
recognize.
I'd like to thank you, and I will take advantage of that open door, because I definitely woke up, and I'll save all the other questions for our sit-down meeting, and I appreciate the opportunity to do that, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
And the door will be open. You're a great member, and I look forward to your feedback.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to ask a question? You're recognized. Representative Will Height.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, Chair.
Promotion. Like Speaker better.
Promotion.
I'll say it. I understand maybe it's your shock and awe kind of approach there, Chair, but not always agreeing. It's maybe the most accepted in education, but it is an approach. Can you explain to me a little bit about how you said about the our prisons and the education system that they'll be provided our prisoners?
You're recognized.
I can. Fine. Give me 1 second to get to the detail, because I want to get that right. Look, as it relates to virtual, I do believe you have to shock the system to create change. I think we've done that in other areas. I've done it for now 4 years, you know, whether it was in higher ed or what we did last year in school choice. And I think it is a way to make people know change is coming. Today, we fund juvenile justice program through the FEFP, and you must include at a minimum the unweighted FTE times the program cost factor times the BSA times the DCD, basically the base funding, plus the DJJ allocation categorical, a proportional share of ESE guaranteed allocation, supplemental academic instruction, and the instructional materials allocation. And then you have to give them their proportional share of the state average of the discretionary local effort. But there are certain categoricals you do not have to give them today. So a child who is in a DJJ system may get less money than they would get if they were at their neighborhood school. And this would say you're going to treat a kid that's getting educated through a DJJ system the same way you would treat them financially as you would if they were at their neighborhood school, i.e., they'd get all their money, not just some of it. That's why I think the folks who care about this will be happy, because it will look, these are the kids who probably need our help the most, right? They're sitting in jail, and something's gone wrong. So why would we give them less than we're giving the kids who aren't sitting in jail? And this is intended to fix that.
Follow up, Madam Speaker.
Recognized.
A little bit, and it's all in this virtual aspect and what happened. We've talked a lot about numbers, about people leaving the franchise, or the numbers in the franchise virtual schools, and I'm assuming you're aware that they were given direction by the Department of Education to notify parents if students weren't doing well and to go back. And so I wonder how that relates into your bill here about your opinion of franchise virtual schools now and what's happened recently. And those numbers changed, and that I think you said that were so drastic or skewed in how this is happening.
Chair Fine.
Thank you. And as I said before to Rep. Bartleman, the enrollment numbers did not influence this. And then let me just refresh everybody's mind on them, just to remind everyone, just so we know what we're talking about. FLVS had a drop from 54,000 or so students to 50,000 students. So they dropped 4,000, roughly 8%. The franchisees dropped from 30,000 students down to 21,000 students, 9,000 students, almost a third. That is not what has driven this change, though, because there are reasons for that. What has driven the change is, in discussions that I've had with various stakeholders, the performance metrics, the things that we actually care about. Look, we're a school choice state. We're not really supposed to care where people go to school, as long as they're going to school and it's the right choice for them. But the performance metrics, the academic performance metrics, appear to be different. In addition, it creates an awful lot of bureaucracy, because when you recreate, all of the franchisees need a certain amount of bureaucracy, which we will be talking about later, in order to basically provide, in many cases, the exact same product. And I understand the reason for this. Many years ago, people said, hey, I don't want to lose the funding. This was all about the funding. Not about the kids. It was about the funding. Let's keep the funding. So let me run the virtual school. It'll be the same virtual school, but I'll get to keep the dollars. And again, if Rep. Bartleman or you or others, we have these discussions and we see there really are good reasons to not do this, I'm open to that. But based on what I've seen right now and as the starting point of the conversation, it seems like, why reinvent the wheel over and over again? Why duplicate the administrative expenses over and over again, particularly when the academic performance data, which I do commit I will share at the appropriations committee meeting, because I think it is a fair request next week. The academic performance data is different.
Last follow-up.
You're recognized.
Were the performance measures done prior to those kids leaving the franchise virtual school or after? In other words, if there was a decrease in the performance measures, they were told if they weren't doing well to go back to bricks and mortar, mm-hmm. correct? So if the performance measures were done, estimated when they were doing bad, versus when they went back to the bricks and mortar, there can be a different number. If there was a problem of them being in the virtual school and going back to bricks and mortar, hopefully they got better once they got back to bricks and mortar.
Sure.
That's, I think, what the DOE was hopefully expecting to happen, mm-hmm. that if they were having a problem virtually, they couldn't handle it, they went back to bricks and mortar, and they got better. So are you basing your assessment on before they went back or after?
Recognize.
No. My understanding, again, from memory, and I will have that when we present in appropriations, that performance data includes data pre-COVID. So, but by the way, one of the things I want to find out, and you've made me think about this, is did hopefully FLVS called some of those new kids if they were struggling with FLVS? Because remember, there were a lot of new kids that went to FLVS. I hope they did the same thing and not just the school districts. I mean, they should have. I don't know whether they did or not. But hopefully both modalities were calling if you were suffering and saying maybe you should be heading back to a brick-and-mortar school. If they weren't, we should make sure that they do that moving forward.
Any other questions? Seeing none. Is there anyone wishing to testify on this bill in the audience? And I do have some appearance cards. Wendy Dodge, Polk County Schools. Thank you. Alexis Leroy, Step Up for Students. Thank you. Joanne Glenn with Pasco County Schools. She wishes to speak. Thank you. I think you need to turn on the microphone.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Bell. And thank you, Chair Fine. I'd also like to thank the committee members for hearing me out, and for those of you who've been willing to see us in offices when we've requested appointments. I look forward to the opportunity to following up with Representative Fine as well. I represent Pasco County Schools District Virtual Instruction Program. I am the principal who opened the program in 2008-2009, and I have operated Florida Virtual franchises in Hillsborough County and in Pasco County. The franchise arrangement has spanned all the way back to 2003, and taking that option away from districts in meeting the requirement to operate virtual programs is quite simply an adverse financial impact for our state. This is the content that Florida taxpayers paid to develop over the last 26 years, and removing this option from Florida school district means that we will be forced, if we wish to not outsource the operation of our programs, to pay private providers more or invest in the development of digital content. We are more than just an extension of Florida Virtual School with our local district logos slapped on. We provide services to students who are unsuccessful in Florida Virtual School. We are 100% accountable for the outcomes. We have less flexibility to drop students, and we provide continuity of care by ensuring that students transition back into more successful settings. And the ideas here as a mechanism to improve performance outcomes and economize neglect to recognize the district franchises who are high performing and whose academic measures in many districts actually exceed many bricks and mortar programs. This undermines school choice. It removes options for students to meet the graduation requirement. And it makes it harder for school districts to respond to local needs. Our virtual school offers courses not available from Florida Virtual School, and we serve students throughout the state. And it is frustrating to think that rather than continue to improve our program, we might be forced to drop back and enter into agreements that we do not think serve our students well. That partnership with Florida Virtual School has been essential to our success. So thank you for hearing our input. I would also like to mention that I am the president of a consortium of district virtual programs and represent the points of view of many of your leaders around the state. This will harm over 40 school districts who use FLVS franchises as a major source of content that is aligned to Florida standards, and we have all benefited from that relationship. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Glenn. We now have Chris Doolin with the Small School District Council.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. And Chair Fine and Rep Clemens. I never was asleep. I was awake all the time. But when I saw this bill yesterday and saw that one of the items in there is to eliminate the digital classroom program, that is a program that we very much rely on. It was established 7 years ago. Its funding's been up, funding's been down. But one of the uses of those funds are for professional development and purchase of equipment. The technology is often changing, and these funds are very helpful. I can tell you, obviously, and everybody knows this, with COVID, it was the school districts that really stood up when it was virtual and out of school classroom, and we need these funds so that we can train our professionals to be up to date and to address the needs of our kids, whether they're in school or out of school. And so I want to raise that issue. It's very important to us. We have seen a reduction in funds. In fact, our organization, 40 school districts, would like to see it increased. And we'd like to see the base increased back to what it was, at $250,000. So you know, we'll work with the program, but I wanted to raise this because many of you may not have read or heard, or and I don't particularly remember this being talked about. Maybe it was, and I'm sure it was, and it's on me if it was. So I'll leave it with that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Doolin. Okay, seeing no more appearance cards, we'll now turn into debate. Would anybody like to debate? Yes, Representative Barnum, you are recognized.
I truly appreciate Chair Fine. Even before this meeting, he said, I will sit down with you and discuss your issues with the Florida virtual franchise. So I just want to put a couple of my issues out on the table, and then we're going to discuss them further. And I will bring, just like you're going to give me the data, I'm going to have the data. Florida Virtual is paid for through FTE dollars and tax dollars. Maybe we shouldn't even have a franchise fee. Maybe that content that's owned by the public should go to all these just school districts everywhere and allow them to do that. That's just food for thought on another end. But it is about choice with this situation. The district virtuals provide wraparound services. Those choices are not provided with Florida Virtual. They can actually go into a building, get the therapy, get any service they need with that wraparound service. And that's what's special, because the district has the ability to do that in the school located closest to their home, not Florida Virtual, which is truly all virtual. They have clubs, honor rolls, honor societies, all these things. And so that is a very attractive choice to parents who do not want the brick and mortar option. And we know that mental health is a priority in this state. And so the ability to access the guidance counselors and the mental health services, you can't put a price tag on that. I want to also talk about, because it was put in the staff analysis, the drop of enrollment, and I am very excited to see the data. There was a letter, and I agree with you, sent by the Commissioner of Education, urging schools for kids who are struggling to move into brick and mortar. And when this time, when the letter came out, they were like, we're going to do this because we know that's the best for kids. So they looked at the third grade test scores. They looked at where they were on their data. And you will see over the time after that letter, those kids going back to brick and mortar instruction. So what's nice about the district model is we do have a hand in it, because we regulate the districts to a greater extent than we regulate Florida Virtual. So I cannot wait to have this conversation. I know that this is about shocking us all. Take note, I am shocked. And I'm going to be, because you're so willing to discuss this, and I feel confident that we're going to get to the best product and not eliminate this tool in our toolbox for parents to choose, that I'm going to vote up on this committee bill today. And I look forward to more discussions, because I think this will be a disservice to many students and community members who rely on those wraparound services. And we do need to address the data, which I have not seen yet. So I appreciate that, Chair Fine. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Rep. Barnum. Would anybody else like to debate? Yes, Representative Valdez.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And Chair Fine, thank you so much for bringing this PCB. Quite frankly, I wasn't shocked, because we heard it all throughout the committee, you know, meetings, that something was coming up. My only concern in where we're headed is that if we're going to go strictly with Florida Virtual, their customer service has to improve, number one. Has to. The beauty of sometimes having the local school districts be able to have their product is because if there's a glitch in the computer system, someone in the district can automatically reset that. Try calling Florida Virtual. You'll sit on hold forever. You may not get somebody. And quite frankly, they don't care, because they're wherever. The student might be wherever, and you just have a technical issue. That's a challenge, especially when we're trying to promote student achievement. We have, as mentioned before, there are some their timelines for which courses should be completed. So there's a lot of things that we need to work on that's, of course, above my pay grade with Florida Virtual, if that's where we're headed. I am up on the bill today because there's a lot of great things in here as well. And I know that we can make this better as we move forward. But I understand where you're going and appreciate the fact that we want to try and streamline some of the things, but we have to keep in mind as to what we're doing and what is going to be best for children, not the adults. What is best for children and their academic success. So having said that, not to be redundant, customer service has to improve. They need to hire people. I'm sure there's people out there willing to work. We just got to make sure that we hold FLVS accountable as well.
Thank you, Rep. Valdez. Chair Clemens.
Thank you, Madam Chair, or Madam Speaker, whichever.
I like speaker
it may be
better.
Today.
Continue with the speaker.
As an ex officio member of this committee, for the members of the public and people who are watching on the Florida Channel, this is how policy begins. This is not the ending. This is the alpha. And I look out among the school board members and the school teachers and the people who have already forgotten more about education than I'll ever know, sir. I am fairly confident that with the school teachers that we have here in the wise minds, we're looking to make processes better. We're looking to improve. We're looking to get a return on those investment of the educational dollars. And this is the first step. I'm happy to support this today. And I think that when you get people from both sides of the political spectrum that says, hey, we hear what you're saying. We want to take what you're saying into consideration when this policy gets to the third stop and to the floor. And that's why I'll support it today, Madam Speaker.
Thank you. Thank you. Would anybody else? Representative Wilhite, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'm going to keep calling you that now. Listen, this is the first brush at it. We've had quite a few meetings here of talking about different things. I think we've looked at a lot of numbers. Numbers can be what you want them to be to some extent. I'm not one for creating monopolies in anything. I don't think anybody owns a monopoly in education to begin with. I think everyone in this room cares about it. Otherwise, they wouldn't be here and this wouldn't be such a busy committee room. But I also have to recognize that we should not take away from people who work and strive harder to make achievements for our students and their education. And there's been those questions about some virtual schools that are doing great and why, their enrollment and stuff. Again, if we charge people, and it's just like being an entrepreneur for a business, and that's the same thing in this aspect that was created. We tell them and we give them the options and we tell them to go do better and they do good. We should not criticize them for that. And we should hold everybody to these standards. And again, options are good. I'm not saying options aren't. But as I said, every child learns differently too. And every child should have some of those other things that are involved in their year or their entire school year experience, which are those counselors and those educational, not just the education, but the extracurricular activities they need to be involved in as part of their learning as well. And we need to make sure that every one of these programs offers that. And I don't think just virtual only does that. And so that's why I think some of the local schools sometimes relate a lot better to some children, and it's a good part of their education at least. So I think, Chair Fine, I think you're trying to take on something that you feel is important. I think this is a good first brush. I appreciate your open doorness. I appreciate you sharing the data with the rest of us, and we'll see what ultimately comes out of this product at the end of the day. And I know it'll be with the best intentions for all of our children for the future of their education.
Thank you. Rep. Hawkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As a first-time member of this committee, this go around, I can tell you after sitting through the presentations, Nat, I wasn't shocked. I felt as though this was coming, and being I wasn't shocked, and I know that may have been the chair's intent, I feel more he's offered you an invitation if you're a stakeholder to get involved. That's all he's asking, and nothing is set in stone, but if you're not coming to our offices or to his offices, then, you know, it's like we tell citizens, don't wait till after we voted. You know, I want to say that it is about the children. Rep. Valdez, your remarks and our deputy leader about how policy has started in this process, I couldn't agree more. But I feel, again, this is an invitation, and I'm going to be up on it and look forward to further discussion.
Thank you. Would anybody else like to debate? Seeing none, I will now ask Chair Fine, would you like to close on your bill?
I would. Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Look, I have to say I'm flattered and honored, to be perfectly frank, that our two school board members who are on this are willing to go with me on this journey. And hopefully it's a testament to the type of committee that I've tried to run over the last 2 years, where you've had to listen to me talk a lot, but I've always tried to share the information that was in my head along the way. Because of that, I'm not going to get into the why I think I'm right on the virtual education. We're going to save that for discussions. I got the data, though, while we were talking, so I do want people to share. When you compare FLVS to the franchises and you look at the state assessment pass rate, that is the number I could not remember, the franchises overall average 63%, the FLVS students average 68%. That's one of the pieces of data. And it's a bad thing when you don't pass, because obviously these have graduation requirements. We'll share more, but I wanted to give you, I was able to find this while I was here. But the reason I'm going to come back to virtual education. I want to give the digital classroom, I want to respond to that, just so you know. The total amount of the allocation is only $8 million. District funding ranging from $100,000 in Jefferson County to $183,000 in Miami-Dade. That's the lowest of the highest. This is not a big categorical. But here's the reason why we thought we could get rid of it. The current year right now, you'll remember in our budget last year, we allocated $140 million, a heck of a lot more than eight. $140 million in some of the borrowed supposed COVID relief money to reopen schools that were already open. We allocated $140 million of that for technology assistance. As of last Friday, only $31 million has been dispersed, and 17 school districts have not drawn down any of the funds. There's money right now for technology, and if we're not going after that $140 million that has to be spent on technology, this $8 million is not really affecting things. That's why. But to get back to virtual, look, when we heard the date 2003 for a lot of this being established, and that may be true. So I look, you know, my son sometimes does his virtual stuff on the iPhone that we bought him today. The first iPhone came out in 2007. So think about how we're now all attached to our smartphones. We're talking about a framework that was created before the devices that most of us use. This is going to be a discussion. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a terrible politician. But I was really good at building businesses. And the way I built three of them is I blew things up front and then I put them back together. It worked for me three times. And so I'm going to do that here again. It worked. Some of the people who spoke today, who care very passionately about this issue, I don't believe have ever tried to meet with me in the time that I've had this role. I'm sure they're going to now. So the idea was to get everyone thinking about this. And you have my commitment that this is a starting point to get to the right place for virtual education, because as Ranking Member Wilhite said, we are doing this. I don't care about school districts. I don't care about schools. I don't care about administrators. What I care about is kids. That's what I care about. I know everyone here does. And whatever the right outcome is to make sure our virtual education system in the state of Florida maximizes the outcomes for children, that is what I hope that we are going to do. And with that, I close on my bill and ask for your favorable support.
Thank you, Chair Fine. Having closed on his bill, Adrian, will you please call the roll?
Chair Fine?
Yes.
Yes. Vice Chair Bell?
Yes.
Representative Lupus? Andrade?
Yes.
Bertelman?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Hawkins?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Brunel?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Willite?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Ex officio Clemens?
Yes.
Favorable, ma'am?
Yes. Favorable. Okay. Members, by your vote, PCB PKA 22-01 will be reported favorably. Thank you, Chair Fine. And at this time, I will turn the gavel back over to you.
And let me say, it means a lot to me that bill passed unanimously. Now, you're going to get now I'm sort of feel obligated to make sure I really do listen. So, it means a lot, and I really do mean that. All right, so we're now going to move on to our two member bills that we have today. We're going to start with HB 989 by Representative Schoaf regarding the sparsity supplement funds within the Florida Education Finance Program. Representative Schoaf, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. HB 989 eliminates the sparsity wealth adjustment for three school districts in fiscally constrained counties and one lab school that have a population of less than 2,000 students. Under the current formula, these three districts lose money in the FEFP formula due to high property prices, despite the higher cost of operating a school district with a sparse student population. And keep in mind, we are talking about our smallest districts in fiscally constrained counties, and that is the bill.
Okay, members, are there any questions on the bill? Okay. Yes, Representative Williams, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are there any other small counties, small cities that would have these same problems?
You're recognized.
I'm not sure. I didn't analyze every small city in the state. This bill is focused on one specifically less than 2,000 students that have a large land mass and sparse population. I'll give you one example. Franklin County, Florida, they're one of the most fiscally constrained counties in the state. The county is spread very, very thin, and they have one small area of St. George Island that has a very high property value concentration. It throws them into this category that I believe unfairly penalizes them financially. This bill would fix that, though, and you have an opportunity to help.
And Rep. Williams, just a reminder, we don't fund cities, so there could be others in the 67 counties that we do, but in our education funding that he's talking about, we fund at the county level. But, you know, your question's a fair one at the county level. Do you have a follow-up?
Yes, sir.
Okay, you're recognized.
By chance, after I spoke to him on yesterday, we spoke about a list that may be available. Is it possible for me to get a list?
I didn't understand your question. A list of?
The other schools that may have the problem.
Okay, sure. Yeah, we'll work with you and staff, and Representative Schoaf will work with you to get you
that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there additional questions? Okay, there are no amendments. We do have one public comment. It is Kathy, I can't do it. She even wrote it down here. Kathy Sabame. I think I got her. No, Sabame. Okay, Kathy Bame, sorry. Representing the Florida Education Association. I apologize. You can come up here and give me a lecture on how to say your name. But actually, you're just going to wave. So you should still come up here just so I get your name right. So just yell it out. Bame. Okay, sorry. I can't read and I can't talk. So she waves in support. Okay, there's no one else wishing to testify on the bill. Is there debate? Yes, Representative Valdez, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Fine, and Representative Schoaf, thank you very much for bringing this forward. For me, this bill is the beginning of being able to bring districts up in an equitable level. You know, some of these counties that have a low student population and the sparsity, is very important that we provide the adequate funding for them also to succeed. I can also imagine the lack of internet availability in some of these areas, and these funds will allow then at that point for that infrastructure to take place. I see the light at the end of the tunnel for these three districts that we were talking about. So I appreciate you bringing this in the eyes of equity and moving forward to Rep. Williams's concern. Maybe as we move along, we can continue to see how those other districts that may fall into that same type of category but are not at the detriment of those, like the districts that we're talking about today, could potentially have the same type of keen eye too. So thank you very much for thinking about these smaller districts that really need some support on behalf of our children. Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to speak in debate? Okay. Seeing none, Representative Schoaf, you're recognized to close.
Wave close.
All right. Representative Schoaf, having closed on your bill, Adrian, please call the roll.
Chair Fine?
Yes.
Vice Chair Bell?
Yes.
Representative Alupis? Andrade?
Yes.
Bertelman?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Hawkins?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
McClain?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Frunow?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Willite?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Ex officio Clemens? Bill's favorable, sir.
Okay. Members, by your vote, HB 989 will be reported favorably.
Thank you.
Congratulations. All right. Next and last up here, we've got HB 15 by Representative Tant regarding children with developmental delays. Representative Tant, you are, and Representative Hawkins, sorry, you are recognized to explain your collaborative bill.
Thank you. Representative Hawkins is our Mr. Prime Co on this, and he's very active with his school foundation, and I'm very grateful for his co-sponsorship. This bill would bring Florida law into line with federal laws that relates to young students with disabilities. Federal law under the IDEA allows for young students who are not meeting developmental benchmarks to be classified as developmentally delayed, not disabled, and also to receive services that support them in educationally relevant settings up until age 9. Florida cuts that off at age 5. So some generous teachers might continue this to age 6, some do not. This bill brings Florida law up to age 9 or second grade, whichever comes first, conforming us to federal statute. This will support more school children in Florida, give educators and multidisciplinary teams the ability to assess these students and what they need, while at the same time getting those additional supports while they figure out what's really going on with the student. Under current statute, if a student is tested at age 4 and found to be delayed, they have to be retested when they're 6. And that cost is about $6,000 to $7,000 a student, and it takes several months for those services to then be applied to the students. Also, students who more often than not fail a grade, so we're paying for them to repeat an entire school year. So this is going to be particularly helpful for students who are diagnosed with autism, who it's not clear sometimes what's really going on with them, and for students struggling with other learning disabilities. It's funded through the ESE guaranteed funding stream and pre-ESE counts for school students. So members, that is the bill, and I ask for your support, and thank you for working with me, Ms. Popkin.
All right, having explained the bill, there are no amendments. Are there questions on the bill? You want to close? Okay, seeing no questions, we do have a wide range of people who wish to wave in support. The first one I'm going to get right this time, Kathy Bame, waves, representing the Florida Education Association, waves in support. Addison Davis with Hillsborough County Schools, waves in support. Shan Goff with the Foundation for Florida's Future, waves in support. Beth Lebowski with Florida Coalition for Children, waves in support. Edlene Joseph Theophile with representing Florida PTA, waves in support. James McFadden with Autism Speaks Inc., waves in support. Margaret Hooper representing the Florida Developmental Disabilities Council Inc., waves in support. And finally, John Serra with the Florida Association of School Psychologists, waves in support. Members, is there anyone wishing to debate on the bill? Rep Valdez, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Rep Tant and Representative Hawkins, thank you so much for this bill. This bill is going to make a difference in many children's lives, and I know where your heart is in helping our children with learning exceptionalities, and this bill is definitely one step ahead of that, and I just hope that we could ever get to the day where the federal government, including the Congress and the Senate, if they could ever fully fund IDEA to its promise from back in the 1970s to its full percentage. So hopefully, if they're listening, please fund it. Thank you.
Representative Bartleman, you're recognized.
Representative Tant, I want to thank you so much for this great bill. This was like a long time coming, and it's sound educational practices. When that child has that DD, individualized education plan, there are goals, their services are outlined, modifications are outlined, and when you have to abruptly stop those services to do a full-scale evaluation when it may not be developmentally appropriate, there's a break in services, and all of those supports go away. So this enables the child to get all of that support until the appropriate time to test them, because everyone grows at different rates. So I just want to thank you so much. This will make such a difference. And also, to just on a note for the how this is going to help school districts, is that when they take that test at that young age, which may not be the appropriate timing, that child, they're still going to have learning difficulties, so they're going to go right into response to intervention. When they go into response to intervention, they're going to be tier two, tier three eventually, and that takes supports away from the kids who may not have that qualifying disability, because there's only so many people to go around. So this way, those kids get those services outlined in the IEP, so I think it's great. Thank you so much, and I'm very happy that you're serving with us. Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to speak in debate? Okay, seeing no one else, I just want to echo the comments of before. Very glad that we're able to hear this bill. Look, when you look at who we need to help out, earlier we talked about kids who happen to have ended up incarcerated for some reason. We're going to do some things to help them, and clearly kids who need a little extra help along the way. This is why we're here. This is who we're supposed to look out for. I often say every time you give a dollar to someone who doesn't need it, you steal it from someone who does. And so hopefully by doing this, we're going to stop some of the latter and send it over that way. So with that, you're recognized to close on your bill.
I just want to say thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing the bill, and thank you, members. Appreciate your help, and hopefully you get your support.
Thank you. Representative Tan, having closed on your bill, Adrian, please call the roll on HB 15.
Chair Fine?
Yes.
Vice Chair Bell?
Yes.
Representative Olupis? Andrade?
Yes.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Bush?
Yes.
Hawkins?
Yes.
Maney?
Yes.
McLean? Roach?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Trunow?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Willite?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Officio Clemens? The bill is favorable, sir.
All right, members, by your vote, HB 15 will be reported favorably. Congratulations. For those of you in the audience, we actually talked about Deputy Majority Leader Clemens talked about how bills become law. Seeing two members, a Republican and a Democrat, work, that happens on most bills here as well. So we're glad to have had you guys come and done that. All right. We have one more thing to do. We're now going to talk about the budget and my recommended pre-K through 12 budget for fiscal year 22-23. Remember, this is my recommendations. We will not be voting on the budget. It will be put together, and it will be discussed in appropriations next week. Members, staff is passing out copies of the proposed pre-K through 12 education budget for fiscal year 2022-23. It is a little bit warm, so just so you know. The funding issues on this spreadsheet, well, that's metaphorical. The funding issues on this spreadsheet represent the changes being proposed to the pre-K through 12 base budget. If there are no changes being proposed to something funded in the base budget, then there will be no issue on this spreadsheet. And you're going to get two. You're going to get the lines like this, and then you're going to get a one-page FEFP, and we will go through them both. I want to make you aware, this is an important thing, we've also talked a lot about federal funds and the $15 billion of supposed borrowed COVID relief money, of which more than $12 billion has not been spent. And I want to make you aware that this proposed budget does not include the appropriation of any of the three rounds of federal funds that have been provided to the state. We've had several discussions in our subcommittee about the disbursement status of these funds or lack thereof, and it has been decided that we will address the appropriation of these funds during our budget conference process. Members, I'm going to go over some of the highlights of this proposed fiscal year 2022-2023 budget. After you've had time to more thoroughly review, you may have questions, and either myself or subcommittee staff will be happy to answer them. I may answer a few questions here today, but again, we don't vote on the budget. My proposed fiscal year 2022-2023 pre-K through 12 budget totals $17.6 billion. Starting on page one, row one, is the Early Learning Services budget entity. The total proposed amount is $1.4 billion. A highlight of my proposal is an increase in the base student allocation for the VPK program, something that people have been asking for. You'll see that on row four that due to a forecasted decrease in VPK students for fiscal year 2022-23, there's a reduction in the VPK appropriation by a little over $6.4 million. I'm recommending that the $6.4 million be used to increase the regular school year BSA by $40 and the summer VPK program by $34. This is on row five. I'm also recommending the restoration of non-recurring funds for several items that are included on rows 10 through 14. I'm going to skip over the FEFP for a moment and instead go to page two, starting with the non-FEFP budget entity on row 28. The total amount for the proposed non-FEFP is $249.8 million. In addition, this is where you're going to find all those appropriations projects that you're all busily looking for to see if they got included. That's all. They're not listening to me. They're just looking to see what projects have been funded. In addition, the majority of appropriation projects being funded in this budget entity, you will see on row 34 an increase in $2.6 million for the autism centers. On row 37, I'm recommending that we restore $4 million of non-recurring GR for the Reading Scholarship Accounts Program, and on row 97, I'm recommending $20 million for the school hardening grants. I would note a total of 64 projects have been funded, totaling $27.1 million. For the federal grants K-12 budget entity starting on row 106, you will see on row 109, I'm recommending the restoration of $286.2 million to align the Department of Education's budget authority with the total amount of federal grants. To include the Title I federal grant, they transfer to our school districts. For the State Board of Education budget entity, which starts on row 117, you can see the issues I'm recommending to fund over their base budget, which includes on row 121, $745,000 for the ongoing operational costs associated with the workforce analytics dashboard that we created last year in HB 1507. Going back to the FEFP now, on the very bottom of page one, so now we're going from the spreadsheet to the one pager. On the very bottom of page one starts the FEFP budget entity, and in rows 19 through 25 include my proposed FEFP budget. On row 20, the comment box includes a high-level description of the proposed FEFP. I'm sorry, we're not on the one pager yet. Of the proposed FEFP, however, there's also a statewide summary of the FEFP after the last page of the spreadsheet. Now we're on the. Now we're looking at this one. All right, sorry about that. Looking at the statewide summary, you're going to see the proposed FEFP includes $13.3 billion in state FEFP funds and $10.7 billion in local FEFP funds for a total FEFP of $24.1 billion. That includes state and local education funding. There is an increase in the base student allocation of $150. That is almost a 3.5% increase in the base student allocation. There's a $30 million increase in the Safe Schools allocation. So we've just increased that from $180 to $210 million. When Representative Wilhite and I got here, we increased that a lot, and we've continued to do that ever since. A $250 million increase in the teacher salary increase allocation. And as the comment box for row 20 states in the other spreadsheet, I am recommending that 50% of this increase, $125 million, be used to increase the minimum base salary for full-time classroom teachers to $47,500 or the amount achievable within the school district's allocation, but the remaining 50% be used to provide increases for classroom teachers that do not receive an increase from the other 50% or receive an increase that is less than 2%. Or provide increases to other full-time instructional personnel. So again, we're taking that categorical from five, we're proposing that one go from $550 million, preserving every dollar that is there, and adding another $250 million and raising it to $800 million, again, of which 50% we're proposing not go to raise base, that is just to raise everybody. There's a total increase in funds per student of $322. For a statewide average funds per student of, for the first time, crossing the $8,000 mark of $8,080.98. I'm recommending to restore funding for our school recognition program. And finally, you'll see a new item in the FEFP. It's down here about in the middle, called the Putting Parents First Adjustment. This legislature has been very clear in legislation we've passed last year, before, in special session, and we're working on now, that parents are ultimately responsible for the decision of the decisions relating to their children. Most school districts shared that view. But unfortunately, we are in a time in which we have two schools of education, a collectivist school and a parental school. The collectivist school said that children are subjects of the school, will decide what to teach them, we will make their medical decisions, we will decide what information is shared with parents, and others have chosen to stand with parents. We had a real big issue with that this year, when a number of school districts intentionally broke the law. But 55 of them did not. And so we have created an allocation in this budget of $200 million. For those 55 school districts, it is being given out based on their FTE counts to reward them for the decisions that they made. But where is that $200 million coming from? Turns out, at the school districts that had enough money to figure out how not to listen to parents, there are 1,644 non-teachers, non-in-school personnel. These are people who do not work in a school, either as a teacher, a principal, or anything else, that work in central offices, making over $100,000 a year. 1,644 in those counties alone. Their salaries are $200 million. And that is where we will be funding the safe, the putting parents first categorical. Members, I appreciate the support from our speaker and Chair Trumbull and their continued commitment to our school children and for allowing me to present this proposed pre-K through 12 budget today. I know there's going to be a lot of information coming at you all at once, so please remember that as you continue to review the document, don't hesitate to reach back out to me or staff should you have any questions. I'll answer a couple of questions if members would like. You are recognized, Representative Bartleman.
Thank you, Chair Fine. Can you just explain to me the $200 million? You mean you're going to take it out from the other 67 counties, take it away from the other 67 counties to give to the 67 counties? You're going to take it away from the other districts and give it to the other districts?
There are 55 counties that are receiving an additional $200 million being funded by administrative personnel at school districts that clearly have more folks than they need and that are paid a lot of money. You may not agree with me on that point, but that is my view and this is my recommendation. Yes.
Okay, a follow-up?
Mm-hmm.
So basically, you're going to deduct from their pot that money. But some administrators are necessary, and so I think we're going to agree to disagree.
I fully expect that, but that is
on the floor.
I think we were very clear.
Okay.
As a legislature working with our governor, that when we set policy, we expect it to be followed. We make policy here, we make policy in the budget, and it's not, you know, we want to thank also those who stood with parents and followed with policy. All right, with that, I'm going to wrap things up. I don't want to have a debate on this. We'll have it next week in the Appropriations Committee. So we're going to wrap things up. Members, this concludes our meeting for today. Future meetings will be on member policy bills. We're scheduled to meet next Tuesday, February 8th, from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock. Seeing no further business before the committee, Representative Hawkins moves we rise. Seeing none, the meeting's adjourned. Thank you, sir.